Well, not yet anyway. Okay, I just encourage everyone to visit my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, and also go over to my Facebook page, which is also What Women Must Know, because I always have lots of great information that I post on a daily basis, because what I am doing here on this show and on my website and on my Facebook page is empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decision possible regarding your health and well-being. And the show is really dedicated to having profound conversations that enable you to really get to the crux of the matter of things. And that's really our challenge these days. We hear so many sound bites and so many differing opinions, and I like to really get into conversations that unravel the issues and give you that depth of wisdom. So that's what we're doing here on the show. That's what we're going to be doing today, as always. Today, we're going to be exploring one of my most favorite modalities. I used to live in India, and I was introduced to the healing art of Ayurveda when I lived in India many, many years ago. So today's show, we're going to be exploring the ways to regain and maintain health with the ancient healing wisdom of Ayurveda with Acharya Sunya. Now, this is a wonderful teacher, quite a profound teacher of Ayurveda. And we're going to have a very enlightening conversation, but I'd like to first introduce you to her. So Acharya Sunya is one of the extraordinary teachers of the living embodiment wisdom of Ayurveda. She transmits it through the roots of her ancient family lineage, as well as throughout her book, Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom. She is the driving force behind Vedika Global, a wisdom school dedicated to awakening health and consciousness, and was recognized as one of the top 100 teachers of Ayurveda and yoga in America by Spiritual and Health magazine. Acharya is president of the California Association of Ayurvedic Medicine and also a keynote speaker at national and international conferences. And she teaches at the California Institute of Integral Studies and at complementary medicine symposiums at Stanford, UCLA, and UCSF. So it's a great pleasure and honor to have her with us today. So let me welcome Acharya Sunya to the show today. Hello there.
Hello, Dr. Sharon. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and I'm so looking forward to our conversation because you do carry such a lineage of wisdom, and maybe that's a really good place to start so my listeners can really appreciate what an honor it is to have you with us. So can you talk about that lineage that you carry?
Yeah, I'm just really fortunate, I would say, that I was literally born into the school that I was supposed to study in. It's a traditional school, multi-generational, and it goes back, unbelievable amounts of time, thousands of years of an oral tradition of teaching and disseminating, life wisdom in the form of Ayurveda and yoga and teachings from one of the most ancient texts known to mankind called Upanishads, which talk about universal self that we all share. So it's deeply spiritual, not religious, but it connects us to all beings and all hearts as, you know, one consciousness. And I was born in this family, and I had a normal childhood, but I was surprised that so many people visited our home. And I kind of took it for granted that my grandfather, who I call Baba in the book, was a healer and a teacher, and I thought maybe that's what all grandfathers do, but I guess I was fortunate that he took me on as a formal student, and I had 14 years of rigorous education, and I graduated as an acharya, which means a master teacher, and now I have a wisdom school where I try to bring alive this legacy of knowledge that I received, and I have students worldwide now.
That's quite a lineage to be carrying on. What an honor to be able to be part of that ancient lineage in your family and the important work that your family has done for generations. That's you know, it's quite a blessing, isn't it?
Well, Dr. Cheryl, initially it was a blessing when I was growing up, and then for a while there I didn't know what to do with it. It just felt too big. And I had to kind of, you know, find a way to be myself and lead forward this legacy. So this book is my work that I do, my writings, my teachings. They're just a beautiful blend of, you know, who I am today in the 21st century and what I inherited down the ages. And I find it so relevant because it has helped my health and well-being, and it's helping people worldwide. So ultimately, it was just the best thing that could happen to me.
Oh, I would think so. As I said earlier in the introduction, I was introduced to Ayurveda when I lived in India. I lived in India for a couple of years. And I, you know, was exposed to that healing modality and have been fascinated. I'm fascinated by all the ancient healing modalities, be it traditional Chinese medicine or Ayurveda or Tibetan healing. I think there's such wisdom to be found in these traditions that have understood the energies involved in creating health and well-being based on very profound insights, knowledge, and wisdom that has been handed down. And I think we're so privileged to be able to have the ability to take from this wisdom now and bring it into our lives and have teachers like yourself help us. So for people who have no experience and have never even heard, perhaps, the modality of Ayurveda, where would you like to begin to explain what this healing system is all about?
Yeah, great question. And I always begin at the beginning, which is, you know, which is the meaning of the word Ayurveda. And the meaning of the word Ayurveda itself refers to the knowledge of life, Dr. Cheryl. It's not the knowledge of disease, not the knowledge of symptoms, but the knowledge of life. And that's really fascinating because then it opens us to a whole world of wisdom living, a perennial wisdom that, you know, connects us to nature, connects us to a higher consciousness, and teaches us, you know, beautiful arts and practices that we can infuse our day-to-day life with and reap health as well as well-being in the mind. So Ayurveda has been around for thousands of years, but it's surfaced back and it's just being being so well received globally. I'm not only the president of a statewide association, Dr. Cheryl, but I'm also, you know, I contribute to a 60-country consortium where people, you know, these are professors, these are physicians from integrative medicine or functional medicine, politicians, bureaucrats, they're all interested in Ayurveda. And I guess the word is out that it works. It's simple, it's ancient, but it's totally relevant to our life today because it teaches us what we all, I guess, need to remember, that we are natural creatures and we need to respect the biorhythms and of nature and to live by it and respect it and how to live by it. So it's just wonderful.
It is wonderful because it's a comprehensive system, isn't it, to understand how we can live in more harmony with ourselves, with each other, with the world, with nature, because it is in that harmony, as we understand these basic principles, that we can have this vitality, this life force running through us, and also bring balance and harmony back into a body that may be out of balance. You know, I interviewed quite a while ago an author, and he really inspired me because he was a very sick man. He had cancer. He was diagnosed with, I think, throat cancer. He was supposedly dying. He had chronic back. He had been in a brace for years and years and years because he had broken his back. He was a foreign correspondent, had gone to all the wars around the world, and lived a very fast-paced, stressful life, and his body was falling apart. And he basically decided to go to a retreat to see what he could do just to kind of bring a little relief to himself because he had a young child, and it was because of that child that he thought, well, he'll try what he can do to help make his health a little bit better. But he was already diagnosed with a terminal illness. And in that retreat, he started to be introduced to yoga. So So this is a man in a brace, mind you. And I asked him, how could he do yoga? He said, well, I could breathe. So he got inspired. It just, you know, it lit something in him. And then he went back home, started reading all the ancient texts, started doing more breathing, doing whatever he could. And the end result is he healed his cancer, he healed his broken back, and he went on to found a yoga school and study with yogic masters in India, and is an inspiration to this day. So
I'm so glad you shared it, because it gives me a preface to talk about how my own life is a miracle and how I'm surrounded by miracles. And what we call as miracle is because it's an implausible state that Western medicine or other mainstream modalities, which think of health as a fixed commodity that you're only losing as we age or with every day and every trauma, versus these ancient modalities, which always thought of what I call as an infinite commodity, and that we recreate ourselves, that by sheer breathing or yoga or diet changes, I have miracle after miracle to report to you, you know, from my own practice of Ayurveda and teaching. And I didn't write this book just straight out of my teacher's classroom, because my lineage had all these stories and I'd witnessed this as a child, but for the last almost three decades in Northern California with my wisdom school and the multiple charitable clinics that we have across, you know, California, I saw again and again how people who had nowhere to go, even with terminal conditions or conditions like MS or ulcerative colitis, which are immunological disorders, they are people just completely regain their health. And I've shared their stories in my book. And this is why, because I'm turning 50 next week, I decided that I wanted to take a sabbatical in my life and write this book and share so much that I knew. I mean, I haven't held back anything. It's a big book, but it's a book that's going to inspire people and actually give them the hands-on, day-to-day stuff that they can do in their American homes and lead the life of transformation that the story you talked about. I mean, I begin my book with the story of a 22-year-old Brittany Barrett, who, you know, who you can find just by, you can Google and find her. And she, you know, she was on 18 prescription drugs, and including antidepressants, and because of ulcerative colitis, and she was told she could do nothing about it. She had to leave her work and move in with her parents and stay near a toilet bowl. And just with five things, literally cherry picking, five things that she implemented from what I teach, I didn't even have the time to tell her the whole thing. I didn't even have a book to give her. I just told her five things, Dr. Cheryl, and it turned her life around. So what do you say about this? So I've had this, I'm so glad you brought that up, because this is it. It's inspiration, and it's been validated again and again over thousands of years. It's not like these embarrassing recalls and great theories that get a lot of, you know, press, but then they collapse miserably a few years later or give side effects. You know, this is tried and tested wisdom, and it's not for one kind of people who pray a certain way or look a certain way. It's for all of us.
Right. It's universal principles of health.
Absolutely.
And rejuvenation.
Yes.
Yeah, so when we think about yoga, we think of the, you know, the exercise, you know, the stretches, the asanas, but actually yoga and Ayurveda encompasses much more than just doing yogic exercises. It's a whole system that is looking at our thinking and our eating and our breathing and, you know, how we cleanse. I mean, there's so much involved. And I thought that's what we can talk about today, is to offer people listening some practical strategies, some practical wisdom, some practical guidelines based on this ancient teaching of Ayurveda that people can implement in their lives on a daily basis. So how does that sound? Does that sound like a...
Oh, yeah, that sounds really wonderful. And where would you like me to begin?
Well, I'm going to leave that up to you. You're the the teacher here. So how, when you start with people, I mean, what are the most important things, yet things that are easy to implement that people don't have to necessarily go to a practitioner to learn? What do you find are some of the basic things that make such a big difference? Like those five things you suggested to the woman. Yeah. But what were those five things, out of curiosity?
I think, what I remember now from that, because I don't have the book in front of me, but I remember that, was the one of them was, it's so simple. I was once calling it a laughable list, but it worked. But I asked the person to meditate for 15 minutes every day on the healthy self within, that health is their birthright, and let nobody tell them that they're going to be on drugs or a worsening disease for the rest of their life. So I am healthy, she told herself. And the other thing was she put fresh flowers in her room every day, which was like the principle of the senses, looking at something healthy and beautiful and letting that affect her consciousness. The third was I asked her to drink 3 times a day a recipe of a yogurt smoothie, which is in the book, where she mixes a yogurt, one part yogurt with 4 parts water and, whisks it and then adds certain spices. It's very healing for the colon and the digestive system, and it detoxifies the body. And then the fifth one was, I think I just asked her to stay away from regular yogurt, but for that recipe, and cheese, which is fermented. And it's fine, but when we don't have a great digestion, then fermented things and heavy things are hard to digest, according to Ayurveda. So these five things, within a few weeks, her bowel movements reduced from 22 to 8. There was no blood. And then it was just complete, recovery with each week thereafter. And, so that's one example. But, coming back to the question of yoga, I feel like the one thing that I did, I do bring up in all my teachings is that we want to be aware of the yoga of more. It's almost like, you go through a fast food joint and you see a billboard and it will say, now more for 99 cents. So like extra ham or extra meat or double something. And we're just eating like we're in a food fog and we're just eating whatever we want. So the new trend is of just doing more and more yoga postures like an exercise. And, and that can actually be detrimental. And that is not yoga, as you said, Dr. Cheryl. Yoga is it has 8 steps in it, and it includes ethical principles to live by, some do's and don'ts, and also which kind of create better social adaptation and also personal empowerment to lead a more honest and powerful version of ourselves. So those are called yama niyamas. And then, you go into some breathing, which anybody can do even when we are bedridden. And even before death, we can do it and have a beautiful passage from the body. So it's like, and when we do it, when we have scope for awakening health, then we should do it. And, but we don't want to, what we don't want to convert it is into a drill. And then it causes, injuries, and then we blame yoga. So I've had many students who go to, yoga studios where for that much amount of money, they will have 50 yoga postures or 70, and they would come back with back pain or whatever. And then I would put them back on 3 or 4 yoga postures, done calmly, done with feeling, done with connection. And it was just beautiful. And I recommend, Cheryl, a slow and spiritualized practice. And I've actually quoted some study from the UCLA Medical School where taking it slow and rhythmic breathing, it actually diminished the inflammatory response. And so I have supported my book. It's a narrative style, and I've given all this ancient wisdom, but just occasionally, just where it's really relevant, I've quoted a modern study just to confirm what I'm trying to say and re-strengthen in the minds of my readers why I'm saying something. But I would definitely say that there are a few tips that we can utilize for yoga. So the best time to do the yoga, like meditating, breathing, 3 or 4 yoga postures, would be early in the morning. And ideally, we should neither be ravenously hungry, and nor should we have just eaten. So we should, try to plan it accordingly. And I would say, set aside 30 minutes for your practice, or at least 15, and then stick to that routine. Because when we cultivate these habits, they create these, neural pathways, a learning pathway, and our body gets, really aligned with that rhythm, which is really just great. And then there are, you know, these sounds that we can make. And a popular sound is om, you know, it just goes like om. And we should not worry that om is a sound that is related to any religion. I think we can take up any sound, even hum, om, because om is just considered the sound of consciousness, or it's like an organic vibration that is, you know, that precedes all matter. So when we chant om, what happens is that it kind of resets our own internal vibration or our own biochemistry. And it's, there was even some research done in Stanford where the om vibration was found to help with, you know, the brain cells and neural connectivity. And, you know, with the whole science of neuroplasticity coming forward, we now understand that different sounds, smells, thoughts can actually be really healing, and om is one of them. So if we can do nothing, if you're in severe pain, and Dr. Cheryl, you can comment on it because you've been through India and you might have practiced this om, just chanting this om alone has this profound healing effect on our body-mind symptoms. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. It's so interesting you talk about the research, just chanting that sound vibration. It's not really a word, it's a sound, it's a healing frequency that resonates with our being and brings us back into harmony, which is why it's so ancient and so fundamental and found throughout all traditions. It's just, you know, a simple thing that we can do, but it has very deep and profound ramifications.
Yeah, and yeah, it's not a word. It doesn't belong to any language. It's really just a vibration.
Yeah.
And if we listen really carefully, and if we become like go deep into meditation, where, you know, I have had the honor of entering those deeper realms within myself through meditation, I heard it. I didn't say it. I heard it. I heard that vibration. And it's interesting that even if you look into instruments or musical instruments, that the lowest, most profound bass sound is that's coming through. So it's just really beautiful. So I like to create a very personalized, slow, spiritualized, and it spiritualized means it's beyond religion. It can be religious, but it can based on what people want, but it really connects to source, and it connects to your heart, and it connects to what is most auspicious and beautiful. And so an early morning rising sun practice is just beautiful. And it is said in Ayurveda that those early morning hours prior to 6 a.m., so between 4 and 6 a.m., if we can train ourselves to go to bed early and wake up at that time and do this kind of practices, it really has a wonderful impact upon our mind and our cognition and our memory and just on our creativity. It's a blast. And that is why the ancient seers in India would, you know, do all their writing and teaching early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
When we are so fresh, and the universe is so fresh, like it's fell asleep and it has woken up again. So it's really beautiful.
Isn't it that time of the day, that early morning, is when we have the most mental energy?
Yeah, right. And, you know, I couldn't add it to my book because I saw that research later, but there are some amazing scientists now doing really, you know, outside the box research on when is the mind most creative. And so it was a research around when should we be, you know, contemplating on our life goals. And it was, again, that time, 4 to 6 a.m.
Hmm.
So it's like, wow, Ayurveda was really on to something when it was suggesting some of these ideal things. And if listeners are listening and they're like, there's no way I'm going to wake up at 4. I'm not asking you to wake up at 4. I'm just saying start contemplating the idea of maybe leading your own life, your inner secret of going to bed like when the sun sets, and start moving towards a more introverted state. And then as the sun rises, your body will naturally rise, and each day you'll become healthier and healthier. I mean, Dr. Cheryl, I too have an immunological challenge. I have a gene that, you know, causes inflammation. Many people with my condition or with those kind of genetic aberrations have to be in wheelchairs or multiple surgeries, but I just want to tell you that I'm using the same wisdom, and I may get an ache and pain, but it doesn't last beyond half hour, and that also very occasionally. And, you know, I'm walking, I'm running, and I don't plan to be in a wheelchair.
Well, it's something like being a living example of what you're teaching, to overcome things that other people might, or doctors even might have said were impossible.
Oh, yeah, and probably I may not have dedicated my whole life to teaching this. I had so many talents, you know. I was an artist. I wanted to be in theater. I just, you know, I'm full of life and full of hobbies and skills. You know, I was just like a little on the excess side of passion and, you know, and skills and gifts from the universe. So I had all this knowledge and I had this lineage, but I never had any pressure to be who I am. I was always, you know, given a lot of freedom, and I guess, but then this condition was almost like an opportunity for me to reconnect back, to re-own the whole thing in the laboratory of my own life. And probably the fact that I can, you know, not be, that I can go beyond what is that prescription and that fear and the dismay of being powerless or challenged by a body is, you know, and to be able to transcend that and to be able to give hope to others is, I guess it just became my own, you know, I guess it's just become my story all over again.
Isn't that fascinating? You know, you've been given this lineage, but you didn't own it, you know, you didn't claim it. It was given to you. And then you had to go through your life's journey and explore all sorts of aspects of yourself and your gifts and your talents. And then being faced with, a potentially devastating illness to find again what you were given, but owning it because it then became necessary and real. And for whatever reason, you know, life made you understand the importance of what you were given and your purpose.
Yeah, I really started valuing the gifts even more.
And
I saw how important they were. And now, and that's why it took me a good, you know, 3 decades of my own life before I wrote the book. I didn't just write it right after I inherited my lineage. And, you know, I took my time and I have worked on myself, and I have worked with I don't know how many countless people and transformed their lives. And not only their bodies, but their minds and their relationships and their connection with life and nature and spirit. And it was then that when my cup was overflowing that this book happened. And I'm so pleased to tell you that within 2 weeks of its release, it's a bestseller and it's doing really well.
Well, congratulations, and as
Thank
it should
you.
Be, because it's a beautiful book that's so comprehensive. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back from our break, can we go through some of the basic practical wisdoms from Ayurveda, such as, you know, we can talk about the doshas, if that may be helpful for people. We can talk about digestion, which I think is so fundamental to our health. And I know that the ancient wisdoms like Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine always focus on strengthening the digestive. So maybe we can talk about the Ayurvedic approach to do that. And we'll see what else comes up, some practical tips that people can implement in their lives.
Right. I think that's a great list. Let's do that.
Okay. So we'll do that. We're about to take a break. Everyone, don't go away, because we've got some great things to be sharing with you. And this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and we will be right back.
Hi, this is Paul Capilcade, host of The Vinyl Experience, and you're listening to PRN, your source for the best in progressive conversation, news, and entertainment.
Love, lust, and laughter. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, a board-certified sex therapist and a marriage and family therapist. Guests, colleagues, authors are interviewed, and we sometimes dispense advice to create a format that is both informative and entertaining. If you can't listen live, go to the archives and even rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope that you are coming with us.
This is journalist Dave Lindorf. I'll be hosting the show This Can't Be Happening each Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on PRN.FM. Because we know it is happening, each week's program will feature some issue that's been getting ignored or misreported, like Social Security, climate change, military spending, or the government's destruction of the Internet. Please join me at This Can't Be Happening on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. And today we are learning all about Ayurveda and the wonderful best-selling book, Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom, A Complete Prescription to Optimize Your Health, Prevent Disease, and Live with Vitality and Joy with the author, Acharya Shunya, who is just a wealth of knowledge and wisdom and inspiration. So welcome back. Welcome back, Acharya Shunya, to the show and everyone listening in, because we're going to give you some of the pearls, the gems from Ayurveda and from the Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom book to help you on your life's journey to health and well-being. So maybe we can talk about the doshas, because that's such a fundamental concept in Ayurveda that can be very useful for people. So should we jump in there?
Yeah, let's do that. And, you know, the listeners would find it easy if I mentioned to them that doshas is a concept which is akin to what is qi to Chinese medicine. So dosha to Ayurvedic medicine and qi in Chinese medicine. And dosha is an interesting concept because it is threefold. It's not just one type of energy, but three types or subtypes rather. And this energy is really subtle matter which performs different functions in the body. So these doshas, spelled D-O-S-H-A, Cheryl, really refers to almost like the invisible housekeepers of the body. And shall I go through them one by one? I think that would be fun.
Yeah, I think that would be fun, too.
So the first type of dosha is known as Vata dosha, V-A-T-A. So it's a proper noun. And Vata literally comes from what moves all the time. So it's made up of the elements of air and space. And the functions that Vata dosha performs in our body and mind is, you know, regulate all kinds of movements. So in the mind, it regulates the movement of thoughts. So if Vata dosha increases, we can have too many thoughts. And if it's just right, we'll have the right speed of thoughts, right connectivity, maybe movement of the nervous system in the body from blinking of the eye, movement of the esophagus, elimination or ejaculation, everything, movement of our limbs, all of that is Vata dosha. We can also be, having too much of Vata dosha in our body because of certain foods and lifestyle practices, because these doshas are sensitive to changes in our food and lifestyle or seasons. And if it increases too much, then we can have too many thoughts. We can't fall asleep. We may have, you know, even a disease like Parkinson's, or we may feel like there's pain when we move our limbs, or we might have asthma, which is movement of the breath that's disrupted. So when we lead an Ayurveda lifestyle and eat foods according to seasons, times of the day, and follow certain practices, this Vata dosha can remain in balance. And so my teachings always contain references to this dosha. Now, we may be dominant in one or more dosha, says Ayurveda. So if we are dominant in Vata dosha, we ourselves might be somewhat like air and space, you know, moving quickly, thinking quickly. But, you know, which is great because we'll always have new ideas and we will have, great communication skills, ability to meditate deeply, ability to be flexible and adaptive. On a negative end, it could also make us a bit fearful and a bit too impulsive. So with seasoning and maturity, we can balance ourselves. And then we have the other dosha, the second dosha, which is known as Pitta, P-I-T-T-A, which literally means the heated dosha because it's made up of fire and water, but more fire. So it's like a liquid heat. And the work that it does, it helps us digest not only physical food, but even our emotions and thoughts and problems that we deal at the mental level. So when we have a healthy amount of Pitta dosha, we have great digestion. We can eat a lot of food and put it away. We won't gain weight. And on top of that, mentally, we are agile, we are alert, we are sharp, we have a great memory, we're like problem solvers, we're like, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's, we're a bit detail-oriented, but that's great. The world runs because of the pitta, you know, and that's great. But in excess, it can create heat in the body, heartburn, boils, acne, and even a bit irritable or snappy temperament. So when we have pitta, we could, you know, on the positive end, be leader-like and really sharp and intellectual and even cheerful. But on the negative end, it can be a bit like we feel burnt out and exhausted by our own mental problem-solving tendencies. Some of the readers might find that like, oh, that feels like me. And, you know, we can't tolerate heat very well, and, you know, the sunshine would give us a headache. And so leading Ayurveda lifestyle where we use cooling coconut oil or make a sherbet with roses from our garden or drink a tea with marigolds and them that grow in our garden, all of these things can balance pitta. And we may have thought we have rosacea or heated eczema or we just have a temper problem, but it could just really be this dosha. And through the lifestyle wisdom that I teach, you know, things come in balance. And I've had so many people sigh of relief and they say, I love my fire, but I'm going to, like, I love disciplining it so that it helps me be powerful, but I don't want to burn any bridges and least of all exhaust myself with my own heat. And finally, the third dosha is known as kapha, K-A-P-H-A, kapha. And it literally is more like water and earth in it, so it's more liquid solid. It's like kind of dense. And it creates weight in the body, a healthy weight. It gives us that good layer of, you know, beauty fat almost, so we are not too thin or too burned out, and it gives us nourished, beautiful hair, you know, glowing skin, and in the mind it gives us endurance and patience, and in the body it just gives us well-rounded joints and beautiful curves in case we are a woman, and in men it will give a natural chest, and, you know, we'll wonder, you know, where did this kid go to a gym, but they just have kapha. So it gives a lot of solidity and density and beauty and immunity and as well as endurance when it's working. But when it's too much, it can create like weight gain, water retention, depression, heaviness, grief, and, you know, all that wet, heavy stuff in body and mind. Mm. And when we are dominant in it, we are like really dependable people. But on the other end, we could become like over loyal, you know, overly have excessive inertia and be maybe even stuck a little bit. So once again, we read a lifestyle of, you know, what kind of teas, what kind of oils, what kind of exercises help with kapha balance. And people lose like hundreds of pounds of weight when they've gone to just about every kind of expensive weight loss system in the world. And they're like, oh, no, this works. And I say, thank you, Shunya. And then I say, don't thank me. Thank this 5,000-year-old tried and tested system that has not been created by somebody who just figured it out in sitting in their own imagination. This is, you know, given to us by seers, and it's been utilized and corrected and matured into this profound science. So the knowledge of the dosha sets us free because we know ourselves a little bit more. We know what are our weaknesses and strengths. We know which foods will help us more, which seasons we have to be more careful about. What can we do? Oh, should we sleep more or sleep less? Should we eat more in the daytime or should our dinner be heavier? Should we be eating sweet snacks or salty snacks? All those question marks where we keep groping in the blind, they get answered by the simple, persuasive knowledge where it's almost like each page or each class of this knowledge takes us into greater and greater insights about ourselves. So sometimes, Cheryl, it is said that Ayurveda is a mirror to ourselves, and we understand what we can befriend that's going to keep us happy and healthy.
And, you know, this is such an interesting topic, the doshas, and I know there are probably quizzes people can find online. You write about it in your book, and, in fact, throughout your book, you look at the different doshas and how they manifest through various issues in our lives. But it's a guide to help us get back in balance because we're these types that you're talking about, these doshas, really are very profound in giving us that insight into who we are. I know there was a time in my life when I was very young. I was very skinny, very thin, little, kind of willowy child, which would put me more into that Vata dosha. And then there were times in my life when I really struggled with depression and overweight, and, you know, metabolism was really impaired, and I was very kapha, and, you know, throughout my life trying to get more balanced with those issues. So you need to know what to eat and what food supports that type and that energy pattern that you're operating with to bring about correction, to bring about the best of those energies, but not to be manifesting the symptoms of imbalance, I guess you might say. So it's a really, really useful, it's not just a model. I mean, it's a truth about how our energies are expressing in our bodies.
Yes, and that's so beautiful. And then apart from the doshas, what is even more significant in my body of work that I bring forward in Ayurveda is that I've taught these universal diets that anybody can follow, whether we know our dosha or not, which have been given by these ancient texts, which are more universal in nature, but they are more seasonally relevant. And they are not just based on, oh, I'll just look up my local seasonal guide and eat seasonally, which is great. That's a great first step. But again, when we look at Ayurveda, it actually underlines that if, say, it's spring, then can you eat more of these foods? Or if it is fall, can you incorporate more recipes, including the pomegranate? And so then what happens is we are eating the superfoods of that season more, and we are literally changing ourselves. And so, we're changing our immunity, and we are reaping health, and we don't even need to know our doshas. So what I did was, the way I wrote the book was that we can know our doshas if we feel comfortable, you know, kind of being more evaluative about ourselves, or we can just skip it and move into this universal piece that's lesser known. And it's lesser known because it's kind of, you know, distributed in those ancient texts, and somebody had to research them and put them together. So while the dosha diets are more popular, the universal diets are less popular. But fortunately, Cheryl, I'm happy to announce to you that my book has a focus on the universal aspect too, because I wanted everybody, a beginner, to not be daunted by the doshas and just jump in and eat those superfoods that the seers, the yogis were eating and living powerful, beautiful, sexual, vital, happy lives.
So can you give us a couple of little tips on those foods? You know, we're getting into spring, so maybe some suggestions for spring, but I have a lot of people listening in Australia and New Zealand, so maybe some tips for those people who are going into fall.
Oh, absolutely. So let's begin with fall. And, you know, fall is a season where, you know, according to Ayurveda, we have to balance, even though it's kind of cooler outside, but we're just ending summer. And all the heat and dryness of summer has accumulated inside us. And in the beginning of fall, there is a peak of pitta or heat. So we are recommended to pluck roses from our garden. Hopefully they are pesticide-free, or grow them and, you know, or source them from somewhere. And then just make a tea out of it, a hot tea, and add sugar to it, raw sugar, cane sugar, and then let it steep until it cools down at room temperature to drink that. That becomes rose sherbet. And that's super healing, super food. It balances all three doshas. It reduces heat from the blood. It's great for your complexion in case you've had sunburns or rashes, or you are dealing with, you know, fear of, you know, skin cancer or anything. Rose sherbet is the thing to do in fall. Another thing is a pomegranate a day is going to keep your doshas balanced in fall. Mm. And when you drink that pomegranate or eat those seeds, keep that rind of the pomegranate too. And when it dries, grind it up in a coffee grinder, and you can even give your teeth a polish with that pomegranate peel. Mm. Because, and I've quoted research, really like state-of-the-art research, which now proves that the pomegranate peel is just about the best antibacterial, anti-cavity agent in the oral cavity, in the mouth. And this has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. So, you know, and it's not even bitter. It tastes like woody. So, and you can even make a hot tea out of it and gargle in your mouth with that warm tea with pomegranate. So, you know, pomegranate is something. Then in fall, we also recommend cooking foods in coconut oil, which is cooling, versus olive oil, and also recommend maybe even eating ghee or what is known as clarified butter, a real favorite fat in Ayurveda made with cow milk. And I know that it's available, you know, in all parts of the world and even by, you know, online providers. And then, so these few things added in fall regimen will prevent, you know, the breakout of, you know, heat rashes and hives and, you know, even herpes breakdown and even fevers. All of this would be reduced, the typical things that happen in fall. And in spring, back here, back home, all of us need to be increasing the amount of spices we use in our food. And I hope people will look into Ayurvedic spices section in my book, where I recommend especially cumin, and I recommend mustard seeds, and I talk about how to use it. But especially incorporate turmeric, the yellow spice, which is in so much news because it has been found, as Ayurveda had been predicting all along, that it's anti-cancer and it's anti-AIDS, and Ayurveda calls it a number one immunity balancing and enhancing agent. So you can, you know, sprinkle a small amount, not a lot, like just a tip between your thumb and forefinger into your entree for one person. So if there are cooking for two people, use two pinches, so maybe like 1/8 of a teaspoon. And just use turmeric in everything you are sautéing, or, you know, liberally sprinkle it before baking. It can be used both in sweet and savory dishes. And it is one of the best herbs that's going to prevent spring allergies. And so, and then we talk about the use of more hot water than cold water, because hot water will prevent kapha, which is the buildup of moisture and phlegm. So we talk about that. And then, you know, so it just goes on and on. But it would be great to use more greens and, you know, eat less of the sweet, heavy fruits like banana, etc. But the berries are better. So this ancient wisdom of foods and seasons and this universal teaching is in my book. And it's thousands of years old. And I've had case after case of recovery from chronic rhinitis, allergies, hay fever, asthma, just by making changes in the diet. And and one may or may not know one's dosha. If one knows it, which I have that information too, it just helps. But if one wants to just jump and look up the spring diet and just blindly incorporate some aspects of it, they're still good to go. And the best part, Dr. Cheryl, is that whether you're eating Japanese food or Ethiopian or Indian or American, doesn't matter. There are recipes which are really ancient from my family that one can use and heal people when I use them. But they could just add these spices or use these vegetables in their traditional, you know, regional preparation, and they're still benefiting from Ayurveda. No major change in religion or cuisine required. That's the best part.
You know, turmeric is so popular these days. Are you happy to see turmeric kind of in this revival?
I am so happy. I am so happy. And, you know, there are, of course, there are some, you know, there is some course correction required in terms of when a knowledge translates from a great tradition in bits and pieces. You know how it goes. There can be some misinterpretation. But I think overall, there is a spotlight on what Indian medicine Ayurveda has to offer. And I really love that.
Yeah, I just see so much of the turmeric and the, what do they call it, the golden milk is with turmeric and... I think they're doing it with almond milk, but I know it traditionally it's probably done with cow's milk. But just these healing foods that are coming into mainstream. I was just at the Natural Products Expo and saw a lot of these foods that are being introduced now into the mainstream, which is really good. You know, so talking about all these healing foods, I think I'd like to make sure we mention a little bit about the guidelines based on the Ayurvedic wisdom around digestion, because I kind of get a little horrified, to be honest, in the morning when I see people ordering icy cold drinks first thing in the morning.
I know.
You know, it's like I want to tell them, please don't do that. So can we talk a little bit about how to support our digestive system? What are the best foods? What are the temperatures of things we should be eating, at least during the day or in the morning? Well, whatever. I mean, you've got all the wisdom there to share. How can we help guide people to keep their digestive systems strong?
I think there are three things that I would, you know, due to our short time, that I would like really like to use the opportunity of your wonderful platform to share with people, whether they buy the book or whether they follow Ayurveda further or not. But maybe when they hear us, it would just ring a bell, you know. And one of them is the temperature of the water. You know, please don't shock your digestive system by ice cold water or drinks, because ice is foreign to the human stomach. You know, no other animal drinks ice drinks. You know, we drink naturally cool temperatures in winter or warmer, but don't do ice, because that's just something that we started doing after we had the technology to make ice. And now we become addicted to it, or we don't think about it. It's that fog, you know, we just do things because others do it. But that can really compromise our digestive system. All of Asia drinks warm water, actually, and we can use, because we are so sedentary, if we were running around trying to, like, you know, capture our food and then eat it, we would be exercising enough to just eat the food raw, even, you know. But now that we are so sedentary, we actually need more thermal power, and so we can borrow it from a hot cup of water or a hot, you know, tea. Along with our food, and that's going to actually help. So it's like physics, use physics. And you know what cold water does is it constricts channels, and hot water opens it, and so it opens the channels through which our enzymes and food and everything can flow. So just simply use basic physics, because that's what Ayurveda works off of. It's just common sense persuasion. And we've had so many people with chronic, you know, stomach pains, nausea, heartburn, you know, and I have a study of somebody who had 30 years of undiagnosable pain, and she'd gone through everything back here in California to deal with it, just about every state-of-the-art test and technology, and hot water did it for her, and some few basic changes that I'm talking about, and she's healed, you know, and, you know, she shared her story willingly with me. Then the other part is snacking. It's become so big now. Snack, 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 snack. Especially the snacking industry would love us to snack, snack, snack till the cows come home. But the fact of the matter is that most animals, including the human animal at one time, we had to work for our food. We had extended periods of fasting in between eating, of searching, locating, cooking our food, finding our food, dividing our food. So there was just a lot more activity going on. We didn't just walk up to our refrigerator or to our Ziploc bag and just eat some more. So all those myths are more common now, and we're just killing ourselves with our food. I just have to say that. And, you know, we barely digested one batch of food, and process has gone so far, and a new batch enters. So we have half digested, inadequately digested, partially digested, some, all of it mixes up to create, you know, chronic toxins, which then create things like chronic fatigue, you know, chronic skin problems, even cancer or cavities, you know, no matter, you know, because the toxins can show up at a cellular level, at a dental level, at a cholesterol level, in our arteries, or even in our cellular level, causing all kinds of cancerous growths. And so I have worked with thousands of people helping get off of snacking and batching their food. So if I feel like eating a cookie, I'm eyeing a cookie between breakfast and lunch. That's what I'll start my lunch with. But I won't just, you know, put it in my mouth in between. And I'll try to walk and move and do my house chores or walk my dog or even walk from, you know, place to place, even if I'm working in an office, so that, you know, I'm moving and I'm digesting that food and I feel real hungry, and that real good hunger. And waiting for it, fasting before it, helps me make sure that the food I eat doesn't become a liability or fat or toxin, but really moves through me and keeps me, you know, good-looking and happy. That's all I'll say, you know. And the third one, the third that's really important principle is that we're not against raw food. Sometimes there is a myth that Ayurveda doesn't like raw foods. We're okay with any kinds of foods. We're not against this or that. All Ayurveda is trying to say is, can you digest it? Are you so sedentary that you don't even have the metabolism, and so you need to borrow the fire from the stove to cook it, so that you can then cook it? Or are you an athlete, and then you can eat whatever you want? So I would say even steaming your salads, or at least eating the raw foods at lunchtime when the sun is super sharp, so we borrow the heat from the sun versus at nighttime or late night. So these three things really help. And, of course, it goes without saying that Ayurveda would want us to cook fresh. Even a cup of milk or a boiled egg fresh is better than opening a can and, you know, unlocking the so-called really tired freshness that lives inside packaged and processed foods, not to mention all the, you know, preservatives. But I don't think your listeners are those kind of people, Dr. Cheryl.
No, absolutely not. So that's interesting. So, you know, we want to have warm drinks, which traditional Chinese medicine also talks about the importance of having warm drinks. I mean, I never have cold, icy drinks. It's, you know, I just have been trained over the years. I know better. And also, you know, traditional Ayurvedic food is never really raw, as is Chinese food, you know. So, you know, those are such great tips. Oh, here's the music. We've come to the end. We could carry on this conversation for a long time. But we're at the end of our show. So let me thank Acharya Shunya for her book, Ayurvedic Lifestyle Wisdom. Is that the best website, Acharya Shunya, for you?
AcharyaShunya.com would be a great place for our listeners to reach me.
Well, thank you so much for your wonderful work. It's been a pleasure. And everyone listening, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.